Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Today is Tuesday, April 30th, and BetOnline once again remains your number one source for all your summer sports this season. Whoa! From MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats, all the latest odds, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online where the game starts. John, I'd like to start by saying happy holidays. I hope you had a good one. It was NFL draft this past weekend. To those who celebrate, I hope you all had a wonderful time. There's some other stuff we could talk about, but you know, let's start there, and then we'll talk about some Michigan State football stuff. But happy belated holiday to you, John.
It was awesome. I love this weekend. Now it's become a bigger and bigger event, and so, like, I think I read, what was it, 300,000 people were on site in Detroit at one point, and like 600,000 in this came into the city overall or something. Like, that's awesome for the city, first of all. And
yeah,
the reviews seem to be raving from other fans who go to these events, which that's a really cool idea if you had a ton of money. I would definitely go to the draft every year if I, like, didn't have a job and could do that.
Yeah, like,
that'd
go
be
to
a
the
fun,
cities
weird thing to do,
see what the cities are all about.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly.
I think the final number I saw was like 775,000 people came in over the course of 3 days.
We
which is so cool.
Football team so bad. Like,
oh my god,
look at that. Like, one year of success and we were like showing out like a Super Bowl winning parade numbers.
Somebody made the point that, like, if Detroit ever got a parade, that might look like peanuts.
Yeah,
I think I have to agree. Like, I can't even imagine.
I would drive.
Well, that's just it. I think so many people would do that. And also, like, I just can't imagine. The Lions didn't even have a high pick this year. They had the 29th pick. That's the irony of this event to me, was that the 1 year, not the 1 year, obviously they've changed in the last few, but like over the history of the franchise, more often than not, they're picking in the top 10 or so when the real, you know, lights are bright. And yeah, this year, of course, they're all the way back at 29, ended up at 24, taking a, yeah, by the way, got to say, I subscribe to the Brad Holmes, his school of thought, which is just draft Bama DBs. You know, Brian Branch a year ago, Terry Arnold this year, tough to complain.
Well, I think you and I have come up with this idea or theory that if you were a GM and you were given the parameters of you can only draft people from Alabama, LSU, Georgia, and Ohio State, that you could probably make a playoff roster in 3 years.
Oh yeah, I think no question you could pull that off. I strongly believe it.
Why are more people not doing this?
It's funny. You look around at the best drafters, and two names that come up more often than not are Howie Roseman and Brad Holmes. And you'll notice both of them tend to draft from programs like Alabama, LSU, Georgia, and Ohio State. Yeah, it's not a coincidence that that's the way that it went. I mean, the Lions this year took a Bama DB and an LSU defensive tackle. Right off the bat, they also took in a Mizzou DB who was technically an SEC guy.
He transferred from LSU, did he not?
Well, no, Mekhi Wingo transferred from Mizzou to LSU, and then Ennis Rakestraw stayed, which is just an awesome name,
yes,
stayed at Mizzou his whole career. So, you know, listen, it's not a coincidence that the guys that are good at this typically take the players from those programs. So full agree there. John, there's one thing, though, about this draft that we did not talk about before this show, but I want to bring up. The run on quarterbacks. So for those who, if you missed it, six quarterbacks got picked in the top 12 of this draft. Uh-huh. I felt outside of the first, I had a lot of very personal reactions to all of these quarterbacks. Like the Michigan State ties to all but two of them were significant. Now, started off with Caleb Williams going to the Bears. No real MSU tie there, aside from the fact that what?
I'm saying, okay, out of the gate slow, but I'm tracking.
Yeah, okay, off there. Number two pick, Jaden Daniels.
Yep. Oh boy.
Listen, I remember all of however many years ago going up Michigan State traveling to Tempe to take on the newly Herm Edwards led Sun Devils, quarterbacked by a redshirt freshman no one had ever heard of named Jaden Daniels, who promptly destroyed Michigan State. Absolutely went nuts against MSU. And it's not like he was this outstanding college. Like, he wasn't this incredible quarterback at Arizona State.
Right.
But if you would have seen him play not only that first year, but then the second year when he also ripped Michigan State apart, you would have thought, oh, yeah, of course this guy is going to be the number two overall pick. It was unbelievable. I'm going to try to find all the statistics. Actually, wow, this is so depressing. MSU was number 18 at home and lost 10-7 to Arizona State. Jaden Daniels didn't even play particularly well. So that's cool. He was throwing to Brandon Ayuk that day. Maybe the storyline fell flat. Either way, very personal. Felt extremely personal that Jaden Daniels was getting picked and right in our faces. Third overall pick was Drake May, who, just for the record, I'm pretty sure there's an episode of this show where I was like, this dude's a stud. He's going to be a top five pick.
Yes.
Fact. Score one for me. Correct. Score one for me. Moving on. Number eight pick.
That may have been like years when he was coming into his sophomore year. I kind of remember you saying that. And I was like,
Drake May.
Yeah. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Man. I'm just saying, great, great family of athletes. They all look exactly the same. So he went to the Patriots, thought that was a good pick. This is where things get real personal. Mm-hmm. Number eight, which is truly one of the most shocking picks I can remember in a long time in the NFL draft, was Michael Penix Jr. getting drafted by the Atlanta Falcons. So many connections here. First, from this show, we have been talking about Michael Penix for 5 years. No, like 5 years. There's so much tape of us talking about this guy, not only at Indiana, but then it's like he drove the truck over us and then backed it up like four different times over our program. Like,
we get it, dude.
Yeah.
Our bad. Like, we said your last name like, wrong. Relax.
Okay, dude. Like, fine. Like, and now he gets drafted behind Kirk Cousins. I mean, just the insult to injury coming for our guy's job right off the bat. Like, this man, I got to say, he's one of the greatest, like, revenge artists and haters of all time. Like, he's heard us say it, and he has not let it go.
I respect it. Do I deserve it? I don't know. I respect it.
Yeah, dude, listen, if there's one thing we respect on this show, it is pettiness.
Yeah, man.
And that is, he's pushing the bounds of the limits of pettiness. But I was glad I could motivate him to be great. So congratulations, Michael. We'll see you when you're 28. We'll see you when you're 28 and playing.
Friend of the pod, Michael.
Yeah, Michael Penis. At number 10, the Minnesota Vikings trade up to select J.J. McCarthy. Mm. I have truly no idea if he will be any good. Truly no clue. No clue at all.
You
anything?
I threw something out to the world, just probably not thought through well enough, but just wondering if anyone else got the Mateen Cleaves vibes.
Like,
will his career translate similarly? Like, you know, like a really good college player, really, really good. And maybe just not quite good enough at the next level. It doesn't mean you're bad. It just means, like, I don't know. It just maybe kind of felt similar. And maybe
I don't think anybody could truly know. I think playing him this year is a mistake that Minnesota's definitely about to make, because if he sat for a year, there's no denying how physically gifted he is. Like, he's a very, he was a 5-star recruit, big arm. You've seen him make a lot of impressive plays, but he just was asked to do, relative to all of the other quarterbacks that got drafted in the top 12, so little. And that's not a knock on him. It's a testament to the team he was surrounded with and maybe knowing the defenses that were going to be called against him every play for 2 years. But, you know, but it might play a role. Who's to say? I know he has Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, decent offensive line, yada, yada. But, like, you're throwing him into, like, he didn't even have to play against Michigan in the Big Ten. You know, like, you talk about going against a bunch of future pros, like, Listen, give him credit. He won a national championship. There's no taking that away from him. But you're talking about a matter of, like, I don't know, over the course of his career, like 6 games against real powerhouse programs: Penn State, Ohio State, Bama, and Washington. Like, now you got to go against the best players from all of those teams, all on the same field at the same time, right away, with, like, not like a version of that as your own team. I don't know. Like, I think they should sit him for a year, play Sam Darnold, suck or whatever, and then let him play. But I think the fastest way to break him is to let him develop a bunch of bad habits and throw him into hot water too fast. He's on a rival team and he went to Michigan. So, like, I'm not, you know, going to be heartbroken at any of the outcomes, but I do hope that he gets a fair shot and they sit him for a year, because if they play him, I don't see it going well.
Well,
and no one seems to want to say that, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, if he's ready, you know, maybe he's ready, you know, and he's great. So, like you said, you're putting a lot of pressure on somebody, and maybe he's built for it, though. You know, very, very few people are. So, tough division too, right?
Brutal division. Brutal division. He's on the worst team in that division and might have the best.
Yeah.
He has an incredible cast of characters around him, and then they might finish last in the division. It's crazy. All right. Yeah. Back to the draft. Because this last one really is the one that hit home for me, despite all of these. It's at number 12. The Broncos select Bo Nix.
Oh, yeah.
Oregon quarterback.
Amazing.
I've been on the record for, again, multiple years saying that Bo Nix is simply bad at the game of football. Now, I currently have a little bit of egg on my face, sure. But we will now see once and for all if I am correct, because he's going to start.
Like, yep.
He's absolutely going to start, and he's going to play for Sean Payton, who developed one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game, in Drew Brees. And there's really no looking back for Denver. This was like a grab what you can get and make sure you got something type of situation. And they got something. I mean, listen, technically they checked the box. They got a quarterback. What he does with that, who is to say? But the fact, I got to give him some credit, to go from, like, really, truly bad at Auburn to the number 12 overall pick.
Yeah.
Pretty damn impressive.
I mean, there's also something to be said about like we're talking about, being thrown in as a freshman and against the best teams in the country, it's not going to go well. You know, like, like that's what happens. And, you know, people do grow up, and then you go out west and you play a lot worse teams week in and week out. And you look and you got better and it looks really good, right? Like it can happen. It's rare, but like, let's not pretend that it was any good at Auburn.
No, we can't, we won't, but hey, best of luck in Broncos country.
I kind of feel like this class, as you mentioned, that has graduated, we've talked about so much. And next year's quarterback class, we don't have nearly the connections we listed there, you know?
No, I mean, there were some years within this group's tenure that like intertwined with Michigan State football being relevant and fun. And it doesn't really apply the same way to this next group. I will say there are a couple guys, if we're going to do a little 2025 preview, and we'll talk Michigan State stuff here eventually, we promise. We're just delaying the inevitable. 2025, everyone's going to talk about Shedeur Sanders, and somehow it's incredible that Quinn Ewers is already a year before he's even eligible for the draft. Well, actually, he was eligible this year, but a year before he even goes into the draft, he's already suffering from prospect fatigue. Like, you know how it happens when guys are like, just like Caleb Williams, right? Like you get people starting to pick him apart towards the end of the process because everyone's known he's going to be a first round pick since the day he stepped on campus at Oklahoma. Quinn Ewers has been he sped it up a year early by enrolling at Ohio State a year before he even needed to go to college and then came to Texas and is now, you know, going to be one of the stars of the show. But people are sleeping on him. I think he, if he had been in this class, would have easily been at worst the fourth quarterback off the board. He absolutely gets drafted before Penix and Nix and McCarthy. I think he's probably somewhere in the running with Drake May, maybe with Jaden Daniels, probably not with Jaden Daniels just because of what he can do with his legs. But I think he's right in the mix with Drake May for that third quarterback spot if he ends up coming out this year. And I just think he's going to, you know, he's kind of already suffering from that prospect fatigue, but I don't think there is right now like those surefire top of the class quarterbacks. Shedeur Sanders is going to get all of the hype and love all year though. That has already happened and he will be in 100 commercials. And he's going to be everywhere next year.
And then, then Carson Beck, you know.
Carson, yes. See, I'm already forgetting people.
Yeah, Mr. Carson. Consistency, you know.
I mean, you know, there's a good case to be made for Jalen Milroe. Talk about an athlete. That dude is as athletic as it gets. He has a huge arm. No reason to think that he couldn't be really effective player as well.
I got two more.
Okay, let's hear it.
One near and dear to us. Well, Drew Aller.
Man, that's the flip side of the Drake May coin right there.
Hey, man, it's not over. It's not over.
No, certainly isn't. I am on the hill with Drew Aller.
Gotta
if he connects, that dude he could end up in the top five of the draft if everything clicks right, because that dude has every ounce of talent you could possibly need.
Last one I'll give you, long shot. Noah Fifita,
Arizona. That's fun.
He's going to have, he has the best, one of the best wide receivers in the country as well.
Let's hear you say it. Let's hear you say his name.
Don't do that to me. I used it, dude. So no joke. I used them in a recent presentation for work, and just praying the client wasn't gonna ask me who they were, because I was like, this is gonna, like, is this an HR issue if I can't say these names right? trying my best.
That's very funny.
Yeah, what is it? Teteroi? Oh, man. That was bad.
I believe it's Teteroia McMillan.
I get McMillan.
Yeah, you got there. Mm-hmm. Another fun name. Ooh, sleeper name I'll throw out there that for some reason people aren't really talking about. Yes, Jackson Dart.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Dart's awesome. And
he's going to be awesome.
And Ole Miss is going to be awesome. So that's actually a very good one. I like that. You know what? I'm putting my pin in Jackson Dart. I still think Quinn Ewers is the best of the bunch. Quinn Ewers, in my opinion, should have gone. He should have gone this year. But
I might go look at Jackson Dart. I might go look at Ole Miss schedule and see if I can get a future on.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Dart Heisman, just because he might be putting up funny numbers playing with
Lee. Oh yeah,
and you know what I mean. He's gonna not in the same way Jaden Daniels said, but it's in like the video game numbers. You know that Kiffin's gonna have him thrown for 600 deep into fourth quarter. You know, just running up that shit.
Oh yeah, why not? Why wouldn't you?
Well, right. I don't care. I'm just saying.
He's gonna have a real chance. But I think next year, I mean, we've seen, you know, kind of quarterbacks be at the top for the last, you know, for a long time now. But you've got a handful of guys. I think linemen are gonna have a shot to be the number one pick if nobody pops. Howard from LSU, James Pierce, the defensive end from Tennessee, two guys that are gonna be right there. Another fun name will be Luther Burden from Mizzou. He's a very Debo Samuel-ish type of guy. So yeah, 2025 should be fun. But let's quickly, John, go back to 2024, because Michigan State did have a player drafted, and they had at least one affiliated player also get drafted. The MSU player that was selected was Nick Samak in the seventh round by Baltimore. Clap it up for Nick. Congratulations, man. That's awesome. Michigan State's short draft streak lives on. I don't know what the stat would be now if you took out the 1 year that they didn't have anybody drafted. But listen, if Baltimore drafts you, you did something right. Historically, a very good drafting organization. So excited for Nick. Hopefully he gets a shot. Was a pillar of these past handful of years at Michigan State. So congratulations to him. The other much more entertaining MSU affiliated player that got drafted was Keon Coleman. Keon went with the number one pick in the second round to Buffalo. And not only, I mean, I'll put it this way. We're going to see a lot of Keon Coleman this year. He is going to get a ton of targets from Josh Allen, which is very fun. And I don't know if you've been following along with his interviews and general antics since he's been drafted.
Yeah.
But I want to know where that was at Michigan State, because I don't remember this personality, and I don't remember seeing it this year at FSU. So I'm excited for the Keon Coleman star turn in Buffalo.
I agree. I was like, why was this not captured before? And it's very authentic. Like, it's clearly him. Like, it's not someone trying to be forced. Like when Hunter Dickinson tries to force being a villain. Like, you're not really that guy. Keon, you can see him in his interviews, and it's like, you are genuinely this guy who is, like, practicing catching touchdowns in the end zone and saying you just set a record for that stadium with 3 and 30 seconds. Like, what? Like, that's hysterical. And also, like, a very kind of fun personality that is different from the normal wide receiver personality genre that we, like, kind of stereotyped, like the cockiest guy or whatever. I think Keon is very sure of himself, but at least this is coming in a, like, a different, fresh form of personality.
Yeah, it was funny to hear him talking about his yellow jacket that he bought at Macy's. People are like, did you need that in Florida? He's like, you guys forgot I went to school in Michigan for a couple of years. And he's talking about getting all the colors and everything and the Bills colors. Like, I don't think he knew the mics were on. So this personality might have just been like an accident for him to expose in a way. But like, I love it, man. I hope he's a fan favorite. I genuinely think that he landed in like a great spot for him because he's like not isolated in Buffalo, but like there's nothing to do in Buffalo. I mean, listen, Buffalo is actually a great time. Like the tremendous chicken wings. Generally, I think more fun of a city than people give it credit for, but it's not Miami. Mm-hmm. It's not Atlanta. It's not Chicago. It's not LA. It's not New York. Like what Keon will be able to focus on there is football. And we've seen like he's become such a great player in a short period of time after being super raw coming out of high school, you know, being able to truly just focus on that and playing an offense that like loves throwing bombs will be really good for him. And now Buffalo's got freak quarterback and freak wide receiver. Like it's just going to be a very fun combination and he's going to be featured a lot. I mean, that team traded Stephon Diggs, lost Gabe Davis. So he's certainly going to get his targets, which I think is going to be very fun to watch.
Not the only Spartan affiliates to hit the draft. There were a handful of people who were undrafted, but picked up immediately. And congratulations to all these guys getting a shot. I'll let you go through the names and then feel free to share how you feel about our Michigan State's current situation.
Yeah, sure. So Jalen Sammy signed with the, got a invite to the Dolphins minicamp. I believe these are all minicamp invites, if I recall correctly. But Aaron Brule to the Saints, J.D. Duplain to the Giants. The Bengals apparently have a type for Michigan State players and ex-players. Michael Dowell, Rocky Lombardi, Trey Mosley, and Elijah Collins all going to be together at Cincinnati mini rookie camp, which is hysterical. To me, it also says something about the fact, like the modern day state of college football, where four guys that started their career at Michigan State are all ending up in Cincinnati, and three of them didn't finish their career at Michigan State.
Right.
And then the one that's wild to me is Harold Joyner going to the Colts as a linebacker.
Yeah.
I think Harold Joyner might be the greatest athlete of all time. Like, I think he may actually be the single most athletic man to ever walk the planet. He, and this is not a slight to him, but Harold Joyner ended up playing, I think, three or four different positions at Michigan State, or at least at least three, running back, tight end, and safety. None of those, you'll notice, are the position that the Colts are signing him up to attempt to play in minicamp, which is linebacker. The ability to even masquerade in those four different positions is incredible. Like the athleticism that takes is insane, but it's also not like he was a contributor really at any of those positions at any point in time at Michigan State. So like congratulations to him for getting a look. I think it just speaks to the sheer insanity of his athleticism that he is getting this opportunity with the Colts. So shout out Harold Joyner. I hope that he's just an amazing linebacker because that story would be truly incredible.
That would be pretty damning for the coaching staffs.
Oh, yes, it would. Yes. I do think we have to say a somewhat somber thing here. Actually, I'm going to put a positive spin on it.
Okay.
It can only get better.
Yeah, pretty much.
As a Michigan State fan. I mean, you had one pick. It was by the skin of your teeth in the seventh round that we kept that short draft streak alive. And the fact that we were tweeting out mini camp invites from the football account, that's a bummer. Like, I'm happy for these guys. They deserve their moment in the sun. They've played really hard. I mean, a lot of these guys played a lot of football for Michigan State, and they deserve the opportunity. They deserve the attention. But when your school down the street is tweeting out 13 different draft picks, closing in on the all-time record, and you're sending out Harold Joyner getting a tryout with the Colts, says something about the state of both programs as they're currently situated. Now, again, looking forward, who knows what's going to happen. I think Michigan State fans should be very excited and optimistic about the head coach that, you know, we'll talk about the spring game in a second, that keeps remaining more positive. It feels like you actually have somebody at the helm who kind of knows what they're doing now, generally, which is a huge deal. And the other school lost, basically everything from their, I mean, they had 13 draft picks. It's at least 13 guys you need to replace that were good enough to get drafted. So that's pretty, it's not nothing. And your head coach was the guy who actually made the fifth overall selection in the NFL draft this year. So, long ways to go, but, and there are some 2025 MSU draft picks that we are, or some of the guys on the team that we're hearing about in like relatively high regard, including a couple of interesting names, one of which came from Oregon State and one was homegrown. The Oregon State transfer, Jack Vailing, tight end, was a very productive player at Oregon State with Aiden Childs last year. And was DJU and Childs last year, now just Childs. That gets me excited for a couple of reasons. One, everybody knows that I am so thirsty for a good tight end. I'm out in the middle of the desert, parched, shriveling into the husk of a human being. That's how long I've been waiting for an offense that accentuates and utilizes the tight end effectively. The fact that people are saying, hey, Jack Vailing is going to have a good season, tells me all I need to know about.
Like, I'm in.
I'm in. That's it. Blanket acceptance of that fact. And the other name which just popped up recently that I found very interesting is Malik Spencer, the defensive back from MSU, has played, you know, is eligible to go to the draft next year and is popping up in first round mocks early on.
I mean,
that makes me excited / mildly uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, like, and also keep in mind, anyone can do, like, not anyone. It's a really hard thing to do, to do a 2025 mock already. The people that are doing that are very dedicating a lot of time. The likelihood that they are, like, not ball knowers is, in my opinion, low. Because, like, why would you go to all that effort generally? Like, and also employed by respected journalists, publications like ESPN. So like, yeah, it's shocking, but also like, sure, okay, that sounds great for me.
Sick.
Yeah, I like that. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, like,
it's popping up here and there. Trying to like flip through this, dude. I got shout out to the NFL Draft Countdown or draftcountdown.com. Like, I've been going to this website for no joke, like 15, 20 years. They have a 7-round 2025 mock draft up already. I mean, I just respect it on such a deep level.
Seven rounds.
Yeah. And I'm just really trying to see if he's in here at all, because that's the other thing is I think he's only a redshirt sophomore this year, so technically could come back and might be factoring into their 2026 mock draft right now. But this guy's got Shedeur Sanders going 115 to the Rams, so yeah, don't know when he made this pick or when he made this draft, but whatever.
Long time ago.
But point is, Jack Vailing and Malik Spencer getting a little bit of the early hype. Two names that are currently in the transfer portal, not sure where they'll end. Simeon Barrow and Derek Harmon seem pretty sure to be NFL draft picks. I think a lot of it's dependent on how they perform this season and where that is. But two guys you can feel fairly confident are going to end up getting picked. Chris Bogle has all of the measurements. Doesn't necessarily have the production just yet to get picked. Tanner Miller, offensive line transfer from Oregon State, another guy that's got a shot. So lots of opportunity. And I think it's safe to say Michigan State will have a more productive 2025 NFL draft than they did in 2024.
We'd love to hear about it.
We sure do.
I think Jonathan Smith might be a guy. He seems to know. Is that fair? Is he a ball knower? Maybe.
I listen. I think so.
Okay.
There's a reason why on these very airwaves I've been pounding the table for him as a great option for a long time. It goes back to the fact that this guy legitimately won games at scale at Oregon State. At Oregon State. Speaking of which, he got several guys drafted in this past draft. Hold on. I'm literally pulling it up as we speak because there were several Oregon State guys drafted in this past week's draft, including who was it? Tyleese Fuaga, who ended up getting drafted. Let's see here. Let's click on some local news. Yeah. Tyleese Fuaga got drafted with the 14th overall pick, offensive lineman. You absolutely love to see that. Guy that was, you know, not the biggest recruit in the world,
right,
drafted in the top 15. Anthony Gould, wide receiver, again, a skill position player, drafted by the Indianapolis Colts. And then finally, Kaitan Oladapo was drafted, also a defensive back, in the 5th round by the Green Bay Packers. So they turned out 3 draft picks. Like we said before, Luke Musgrave was recently a top draft pick from Oregon State. Wouldn't be surprised to see other guys come out of that program here in the near future as well. So, you know, I think to answer your question very bluntly, yes, this guy is absolutely a ball knower and a developer of talent. He hasn't been shy about letting guys enter or stay in the portal. I think when you look at Michigan State's portal kind of philosophy, it really fits with what we've kind of talked about. It's like identifying guys from smaller schools that are high performers that are going to kind of fit a culture and like raise the floor of your program. And I just really appreciate his approach thus far. They're not just throwing crazy money at a bunch of guys because they went to Auburn or they went to some other big school and didn't work there for whatever reason. And we know that they're not going to shop at the very top of the range where you're getting the, you know, elite transfers, which, by the way, the hit rate on elite transfers, I don't think is it's not what you would expect it to be. If you're fishing in that pond. But yeah, I'm very excited to see this team this fall. And it was exciting to watch kind of the, as a transition, the, in air quotes, spring game that happened not too long ago.
Yeah. These games were getting different as the game. It's not the same as, I mean, it's always kind of evolved, but it is not a game at all, and certainly not all of the players you want to get a glimpse at, and probably for good reason.
Yeah, I think the interesting part, it's hard to even, I don't even really know what to say about the spring game, because there's this one – it's exciting to watch your new players play well. Like if you're looking for highlights from this one, Nick Marsh certainly looked ready to play. Made some big plays. I would say Aiden Childs, I thought, looked pretty decent. You definitely saw his legs getting used here. And he is kind of the odds on, like, it would be an absolute shocker if he does not win the job just because of familiarity with the system and everything. But the North Dakota transfer, Tommy Schuster, did have quite the performance. Went 6 of 8 for 135 yards and had a long touchdown throw to Nick Marsh. I wouldn't say there's a QB battle brewing, but interesting that they brought in two guys who performed relatively well. And you saw Nick, two running backs pop. Nate Carter had a big touchdown run. And caught a really nice touchdown pass. And then the true freshman, Brandon Tullis, ended up actually having a nice day as well with 48 yards on 7 carries. So, I mean, it's fun to see that stuff, but then part of you is like, maybe don't. Like, maybe we don't televise the spring game. Because because it's honestly, it is kind of like, with the second portal window being open, it's essentially an audition. I mean, I would wager that most schools probably have someone watching all of these games thinking like, who should we try to go tempt to enter into the portal?
What position do we need so badly that we identified and we're like, oh man, that idea is not going to work. Or that transfer kid that we brought in that we thought could fill this gap is not going to be good enough. Like, of course, you know, people are going to be all over this, looking to fill those last, like, uh-oh positions. And it's just so stupid that there are two windows here, like, with this in between, especially. Like, so
I do wonder, like, you know, I read something today about all of the lawsuits and everything that's going on. And basically, like, when the NCAA settles these lawsuits, they're more or less going to create the governance model for moving forward. And realistically, their ability to settle and create that model essentially protects the NCAA as an institution. Like, now they could also just totally botch it because they are the NCAA, but realistically, like, kind of occurred to me in reading that they're probably around for good, provided they can land this plane in their suit. I don't think it's not set to go to court until January of next year. So they basically have the next 8 months or so, 7 months or so, 8 months or so to like figure out how to land this plane. And it's if they so can funny, do though. It, it'll be interesting.
But yeah, dude, like the funniest thing about that, like you're right, it's very interesting that they were given the inside lane. But like everyone's like, so of course, you know, any competent organization is when push comes to shove and has an inside track like that is obviously going to retain the business. But like you said, I honestly don't know if they're going to be able to put something together. Truly, like,
I agree.
I don't know of that many incredible success stories I've heard from this organization that they were not dragged into kicking and screaming, by the way, to do things better. And it's like, you know, I don't know if they have it in them. And so I don't have any reasons to believe. So who knows, like, if they pull this off. And like you said, here's what they're going to do. Just like they do for everything else, by the way, they're going to outsource. They outsource everything for, you know, March Madness. They don't actually run they run the events. They're paying somebody and multiple vendors. And so like, this is just what they're going to do. They're going to be like, they're going to do what every rich kid who is actually a moron does. They're going to have their parents pay for the answers. Right. And like, they're going to go outsource it and be given like, hey, you did it, as they like didn't do it. And we're given money from the backs of like kids or young adults who weren't able to unionize. Like, you guys didn't do it. You guys fell ass backwards again for the 100th time in this thing. And let's just not credit them for doing the bare minimum of saying like, hey, you should do the NFL model, and like maybe there could be regulation or relegation. And then it's like, oh yeah, okay, so the thing that fans have been saying forever, like, and then like the players should be, you know, employees of the school, and they're like, oh okay, yeah, like it's like we've been saying this.
But that's the interesting part, is that this is the thing that they are trying to avoid at all costs, is like revenue sharing. They are trying to avoid that at all costs. What they would like to do, and this is, by the way, settling these lawsuits is their only chance to avoid that. That's it. Because if they botch this, then there is no other way out. But what they could do is, if they're smart enough to say, okay, every school is required to buy out the NIL rights of these players, meaning they have to pay them directly not as employees, but as like you are the entity purchasing the rights, and you can pay up to X amount every year. If they're smart enough to do that, like you can pay less than this amount, but you can only pay up to this amount, then they've essentially created a salary cap and saved themselves. Now, every school will, they'll find some other way to monetize and pay players. Like there will still be incentives to go certain places over others. But at the end of the day, you'll have created a structure in which you can like enforce certain rules, and you can create, you know, a relative standard for competition, at least within the major money sports. And so, and while the players are still getting like compensated pretty fairly, like if you put a salary cap in place of like, I don't know, call it $50 million, they're $30 million a year, right? Like the school and the athletic departments and the Power Four, whatever it is now, definitely have the money to allocate that towards players and kind of pay them each accordingly, like in specific salary bands. The question then becomes, can those players, like if the teams are buying the NIL rights, what is fair value? Because it comes all the way back. It's like, okay, at least they're getting something, but what is that fair value for that? And how are you calculating that? So that's the piece where it feels to me like it all falls apart, because you need to have smart enough people to come up with those metrics and whatnot. And that's where I just do not trust the NCAA to figure it out. I think that model could work really very well and make this sport something more advantageous. And this is where I give Tom Izzo a little bit of credit. I do think most kids end up getting screwed in the transfer portal process. Like 40% of kids or something like that in college football have entered the portal. There's no way that's the right decision for the majority of them. And so there is some downside to it as well, but it's not really about that as much as it is the right that they have to exercise that power and that decision. So I don't know. It's fascinating. I think the next couple of years of this are going to be wild. But until then, we've got multiple windows. We've got NIL things. We got players being. I mean, dude, I want to give you the chance to jump in. But like Nick Saban said on TV that they tried at Bama to get Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, the cornerback who was drafted number 22 overall by the Eagles, to enter the transfer portal, and they couldn't get him to do it. He was just like, yeah, that's exactly what we did, which is against every rule. You can't do that. And yet we know what's happening left and right. And Nick Saban literally admitted it in front of millions of people on Thursday night.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Nick. He's just like, yeah, who cares? He's trying to clear his conscience like one bit at a time. It's like treating it like a test drive for confession of his, which, you know what, Nick, we already knew. So you're good.
Yeah, it's fine, dude.
Like, it's cool. So, but I'm kind of shocked that he said the guy didn't enter. Like, how do you turn that down to stay in Toledo? I don't care. Girlfriend or like. That must have been a very unique situation that would have come back.
I guess, man. Yeah. Good for him. It all worked out.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
But he got drafted ahead of the Bama corners. But like, I bet he could have gotten $1 million out of it for his time. Instead, he stayed in Toledo. But hey, listen, man, good on you.
I mean, like, well, speaking of Bama, I got some interesting news. Nick Saban, you know, you could argue that, you know, is the dynasty over, right? You know, there's an opportunity for Kalen DeBoer to, you know, maintain, but you know how hard that is. Like, and there people are hunting, you know, to see if they are still Bama, right? You know, the Bama. Michigan State just did something that would specifically qualify Bama as not Bama anymore by getting Ed Woods from Arizona State portal over Alabama, while he was in Tuscaloosa over the phone. So
So that is a situation. And
did that, I mean, that's official, late breaking news?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, more or less. Okay. Wow. That's
the Fonger put in the prediction, if that gives you anything.
Wow, that's, I mean, that means something. That's the Fong bomb is not to be taken lightly. Like you said, Ed Woods, you know, is a very highly regarded defensive back from Arizona State. And dude, I don't care who you are. If you can beat out, now see, this is where we risk falling right back down the icy slope.
Oh yeah, baby. Oh,
yeah. We are.
Look how easy that was.
Oh man, that took nothing. But that this is the Amir speed thing all over again. Boy. Yeah.
We caught ourselves.
Yeah. Drafted. Mere speed drafted. Let's not forget. Sure. But yeah, that's not nothing to beat Alabama in while the guy literally visited Alabama. It speaks to Coach Meat, the Demetrius Martin, the defensive back coach that MSU stole from Oregon. I was reading that Woods knew of him, or was like coached by him or something, a good relationship. And yeah, wow, that's a nice pull. Okay.
I wonder if like the sales pitch of, and I think Kurt Cignetti has this same sales pitch, is that he's like, they're like so confident in their ability that is their selling point. They're like, I'm really good at this. And like you heard Kurt Cignetti say something like, check the tape or go check the records. Like, I win. And I think Jonathan Smith might be the same way, in that he's just like, if you want to play here, like, I know what I'm doing. Like, go check the record. Like, I know what I'm doing. And I'm still on the upward climb of my career. Like, get on the train with me. I know what I'm doing.
I'm not going to say that he's like, he hasn't earned this. He actually has, maybe just not at Michigan State yet, but like, he hasn't earned the kind of benefit of the doubt maybe that Brad Holmes gets from Michigan. Again, we're just keeping it in Detroit, that Detroit Lions fans give to him with draft picks.
Right.
Like, Holmes traded up to take an offensive tackle from British Columbia in the fourth round this year, and everyone's like, genius move. Like, that's the type of clout that he has right now. I don't know that
that was a heat.
That was wild. Oh my god, that was a logo pull. And if he hits it, he's Steph Curry, man. And he might, man, shit, at this point he might be. But I don't think Jonathan Smith is quite there yet.
Sure.
But like I said, the profile of the guys that he is bringing in, he is kind of, like you said, it's kind of like a check the tape thing. Like, go watch Oregon State. This dude pulled players from out of nowhere to be really, really good, and he developed them. And it's funny, if you look at it is a starkly different process than the years before. I'm going to just read through the names of the programs that Michigan State is getting commits from this year. And this era, in terms of guys coming out of transfer portal to come to Michigan State from these schools. Now, this will either be age horribly, just horrifically, or we'll look back and be like, oh, he really kind of, we should have seen it all coming. So I'm going to read all of the programs. Okay, we're going to start from the top. What is this? I don't even know the name of the school. SF Austin, Stephen F. Austin. Wow. Stephen F. Austin, UMass, Oregon State, Georgia Tech, Old Dominion, Wisconsin, Indiana, James Madison, North Dakota, Middle Tennessee, and Holy Cross. Those are the programs that guys are transferring in from to Michigan State. So he is clearly not, it's again, stark difference from what we saw with the Mel Tucker years, where we were like, hey, oh, this guy went to Miami, let's pull him in. This guy went to Florida State, let's pull him in. This guy went to Texas A&M, North Carolina, whatever it was. Gotta be a good player. Jonathan Smith's, it seems, paying a little more attention to the skill set than the, you know, kind of the sticker shock logo, you know, part of this whole thing. And that should give us quite a bit of confidence as fans that this guy might just, he might just really know ball.
Or. We'll see.
Hey, man, when I said it can only get better, I was really hoping that was true. I really hope that is the case, because if not.
I think what we're saying, there's no way in the world that a person could be competent enough to win at Oregon State to come to a bigger profile school and take people from programs that are not
not powerhouses. But the thing, like, here's, dude, put it this way. He and his staff knew who these guys were. Like, he and his staff knew who Luke Newman from Holy Cross was. They knew who Quindarius Dunnigan from Middle Tennessee was. They knew who, you know, what's another, Wayne Matthews from Old Dominion was.
Just grinding the tape.
I'm just saying, like, the fact that even have watched a Stephen F. Austin game enough to know who Brandon Lane was, the defensive tackle they just got from there, that's, you know, seemingly a good fit. Like, that says something about just the sheer effort they're putting in, instead of just being like, oh shit, you went to an SEC school for a year, you didn't play, that's fine. You were a cornerback at Florida and you got burnt all the time. Come on down, we'll take it. It's just it's not
fine.
Yeah, it's probably fine. They're not even good in the SEC. It's a defense league. But yeah, I don't know. I like this process more. Now we'll see if it pays off. You know, in the portal, or excuse me, on the field, but because it's not a shortage of talent that's going out either. I mean, guys like By Job, Derek Harmon, Jack Nicol, Jalen Berger, you know, Simeon Barrow right now. There's a lot of talented guys who have hit the portal from Michigan State, so plenty to replace, but it does feel like this regime at least has a better idea of what they're doing.
But remember, best players on a 4-8 team.
Yeah, see?
Like, yes. Like, got to keep that one in mind. So.
You're absolutely right about that.
Probably get better, maybe. Yeah, we'll see.
We hope so.
Yeah, the portal is still alive and well. We said more stuff happening every day here as the roster starts to fill out and those spring game auditions tape hits the wire. So we'll try and keep up to speed here, but really everything's going to truly settle probably in the fall, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's so far to go. I mean, these guys have another couple days to enter, but there's no exit. Like, there's no, you have to be out by this day. You just got to be on a team. You just got to have a chair in the dance by the time rosters come out. And sometimes that's a matter of hours before the season starts for some of these guys, because there really are like no rule. So who knows? I wish I could sit here and say, hey, this roster feels like it'll be in good shape because of X, Y, and Z. But in reality, like, we are not going to know what this team looks like until August. And even then, it's could get shaken up somewhere in there. Which is why right now we have to just trust the process. Mm-hmm. And listen, we got the quarterback. That feels important.
I feel like that's the only thing that could ruin my day, is if he were.
Dude, he stinks. We are in, we're in hell.
If he was taken, like,
oh my god, wait,
see if he was stinks like
that. We'll wrap up with this. I was almost brought to my knees by a tweet from On3. I think it was today or yesterday that just had a picture of Aiden Childs in the red jersey. And the oh my god! And the tweet started with, former Oregon State quarterback Aiden Childs. And like, you read that and you've seen that tweet so many times where it is entering the transfer portal. And I'm like, oh my God, this might be it. Like, Tommy Schuster, I'm sure you were great in North Carolina. You had a nice little spring exhibition, but good Lord, if that's where we're at, we're in tough shape to lose him. That would have been devastating. That would have ended the season before it even started.
Yeah, I was going to say, you are a cooked product as a potentially cooked coaching era.
And like, yeah.
You are done, dude.
Dude, it's like Raheem Morris in Atlanta. His first pick is now always Michael Penix. Like, the honeymoon ended in April. Like, you're not even in OTAs. You're not even in, like, you barely did your first practice. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if he has a house in Atlanta. And he's already, people are like, I know you're not making the picks, but I don't know. Yeah, that would have been the early doors on the Aiden Childs era would have been just devastating.
Oh, man. Well, with that, let's not. I'm glad we put that in the universe. What are we doing?
Yeah, that's good. That's cool. Oh, God. Guys,
I would say.
Yes, I am on edge all the time because of the portal. Like, truly, it has rocked my world in the last two. We have been on every side of it, truly. Like, utilized it about as successfully as anybody ever has. And then just...
Over,
time and time again, just about as much as anybody ever has. So at least we're trying something new.
Yes, I appreciate the new is better, because old was getting old.
Old was old fast. Got late early for old. We'll talk basketball again someday, but I think for now we're probably good. John, you got anything else?
No, we're good. I'll keep tracking that portal for hoops if you do football, and we'll meet in the middle.
You got it. You got this all figured out. Top quality production over here, folks. That's what you tune in for. All right, guys. Thanks for sticking with us. For John, it's been Austin. We'll catch you next time.
See you.